Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. About an hour from now, thereabouts, John McClain will jump in with us for his weekly visit, brought to you by hornsolutions.net. All right, so the Texans are 2-9. Through 11 games, the Texans have only been 2-9 or worse two other times in their entire history. And I think some people would probably be a little surprised at that, but it's got to be a very specific start. They've had seasons that have gone sideways before, but as far as being 11 games in and knowing that by the time December rolls around, your season is basically donezo, it's happened twice before in the history of the team. 2005, Seth, you were on that team. 1-10 to start the season, finished 2-14. Dom Capers fired at the end of the year. 2013, that team started 2-9, finished 2-14. Gary Kubiak fired in December. So the only two other times in the history of this team, in the history of this franchise, where the team has started 2-9 through 11 games, the coach didn't make it to the next season.
Yeah. I guess the difference would be, I think that those two coaches entered the season on teams that were going to plan to compete or try to be good football teams.
Yep.
Like above and beyond what the Texans have tried to do this year. The players and the coaches have tried hard, don't get me wrong. But I think that Caserio and Easterby knew the deal coming into this and knew it was going to be rough. The more we see of David Culley, it's just confirmed that, okay, this guy was hired to be a bridge coach of some sort. This can't possibly be who they had in mind to be the coach for the next 4 or 5 years of the team. And unless Casera and Easterby are actually that bad at choosing football coaches. Because go back to anything anybody said about David Culley back when the Texans hired him out of the blue, out of nowhere, and it was a complete surprise. You couldn't even – everything that people said positive about David Culley, it almost had nothing to do with actual coaching. It was like, oh, wow, he's a hell of a guy. Yeah, he's really good. He's got a way with people. Like, nobody mentioned about how he'd transformed this receiver into that or had taken the Ravens passing game and taken it to the next notch or anything
like
that.
It was the opposite.
It was the opposite when he was the passing game coordinator. So they hired him to serve a purpose. And so the question is, all right, but was that a one-year plan or a two-year plan? And where do they go from here this year? My gut tells me that they had planned and anticipated a two-year plan with David Culley. Maybe things change if the right guy became available, or the right coach, or the right conversation, you know, in the offseason. But I don't think there's a – I would be surprised if they had a pressing – if they felt a pressing need to get a new coach in here in 2022. I think that's a 2023 scenario.
I think you're probably right. And I think the big reason for me – to me, it's all about the whatever the young quarterback situation is with this team.
Yeah.
If Davis Mills is not going to be the guy moving forward, and I don't think he is, and the future young quarterback for this team is somebody that's playing in college right now, maybe even playing this weekend in conference title games. Kenny Pickett plays this weekend. If that guy, a first-round pick – you're using a first-round pick on a quarterback. That's not a flyer. You're clearly investing in that guy. That's the, for me at least, Seth, I don't know if Nick Caserio looks at this similarly. To me, that's the trigger point. Well, I don't think you can bring in your future young quarterback with David Culley as the head coach. Certainly not with David Culley as the head coach and Tim Kelly as the offensive coordinator. Now, if Pep Hamilton is the offensive coordinator, a guy who's actually nurtured young quarterbacks and overseen effective offenses, not offenses that are the worst we've ever seen in the history of the franchise, then okay, yeah, maybe. But to me, that's the tipping point. You know, if they're not going to draft a young quarterback real high in the upcoming draft, then whatever. At that point, it needs to be a business evaluation with David Culley. Like, okay, how many more of our fans are we going to turn off by bringing back somebody who's clearly not qualified to coach an NFL team?
Yeah, and then it becomes almost that you're weighing the pros and cons of, okay, well, we don't want to turn into this Cleveland carousel of coaches and GMs where it just seems like you can't find any hold on anything at any time until these last couple years when they found some stability. But I, you know what, honestly, I would settle at this point, Sean, for just even some kind of acknowledgement by David Culley that things aren't going well. You know, like, I just, yeah, hey, the positivity is great, but I feel like it's filtering down to the players, where Tytus Howard gave his press conference the other day or spoke to the media, and I don't know if I got a sense that he understands how bad the offense is right now. Well, it was a whole lot of like, yeah, things are going pretty well. But it's cool. No, it's no big deal. I can move around all over the place.
But remember what Culley said after, I think it might have been after the Miami game, in one of his press conferences, where he basically said, he was asked, like, how do you keep the player's spirits up? And he said, well, they see me and my spirits are up. And he basically said they don't allow negativity in the building. And so, Seth, I don't think it's one of those things where it's coincidentally filtering down to the players. To me, it feels like it's something that's coached into the players to be irrationally positive all the time. And that's not good. You delude yourself when you're irrationally positive, especially when you're not good.
It's this relentless positivity is the most interesting aspect of trying to replicate the Patriots way, while somehow ignoring the fact that, like, Bill Belichick is like the least rosy person on earth.
Right.
I don't know that Belichick is the classic gonna tell it like it is. I don't think he's optimistic. I don't think he's pessimistic. I think he's an extreme realist. And sometimes the average person walks around with like a little bit of there's a healthy amount of delusional, like an ability to delude yourself to where you're a little bit more optimistic than reality. And if you see things completely and totally as things are, it tends to create some grumpiness. I think a lot of really good NFL coaches are pretty damn grumpy people. I even think the overtly positive ones like Pete Carroll still have a little bit of a messed up cynicism to them.
Pete Carroll is irrationally
doing something about it.
Yeah.
So they complain, they see problems everywhere, but then they try to fix them. I don't know if Culley sees those problems. I think he just believes that everyone.
It's interesting. I was listening to you on with Clint Sterner in the show yesterday, and I thought Show asked you an interesting question. When did players realize that David Culley isn't the guy? That to me is a very interesting question. To you as a former player, when did players realize that David Culley isn't the guy?
It wouldn't have been the same time we did. Because I think for us, in the offseason, we wondered, why the hell is David Culley the coach of this football team? Then during training camp, it looked actually way better than we all expected and anticipated. Especially because of the distraction of Deshaun. Nobody knew what that was going to look like. I think a lot of people have forgotten that 2 weeks before camp, we would bring up the hypothetical. What if Deshaun shows up? It would for him to show up. People acted like that was the craziest thing in the world, and how could that ever happen? So everything went way more smoothly, I think, than people would have anticipated. So it wasn't until the regular season when you started to get this feel that, okay, something's not right here. Some of these in-game decisions, like turning down a penalty that would have given you another third down,
that was
just
mine.
A punt, like all these weird decisions that David made, and then his inability to actually address anything in a press conference. Look, not that press conferences don't make or break a coach, but some of the things that David Culley was saying in press conferences were so far detached from what actually happened in the football game, including like his inability to remember that he had called a timeout in the game. Like all these things, I just started wondering, all right, well, if this is what he's saying to us, what the hell is he saying about football to his players in meetings that makes any sense at all? So, I don't know, somewhere along those first few games, I'm guessing there are a lot of guys that had realized by that point, all right, this is, we've got no actual captain on this ship.
Yeah, I think, to me, it was the Cleveland game. It was declining a penalty to punt. That was like a warning sign. That was like, oof. And then his explanation the next day where he mea culpa'd it, and his explanation was that he was just so emotional over the fact that they had to punt or something like that, that, you know, like he got, it was almost like to translate, he was almost like he was swept up in the moment and he just kind of lost track of things. And I'm like, okay, this is really bad.
He was saying, basically what he said was, I wanted that series to be over.
Yeah.
Because some things had gone poorly.
Yeah.
I just wanted it to be over. Yeah.
Well, and then when he said, I thought there was an incomplete at the Patriots game where the clock had stopped and he kept talking about an incomplete pass, and Aaron Reese pressed him on it the next day and he said, what was the incomplete pass you're talking? Because the Patriots hadn't passed in like seven plays. What was the incomplete pass? Yeah. And he said, oh, I called a timeout. I thought it was an incomplete pass. I called a timeout and I'm going, that's it. If I'm a player, I'm angry at that point because he's not affecting winning. He's affecting losing at that point.
Well, and that's where, and a lot of people, when I asked that question on Twitter, I had quite a few people, including BJ Simmons, ask me, like, well, at what point did he realize that the players weren't any good either? Which is a very fair and valid point. Yeah, two things can be true. That David Culley is not the guy. And yeah, most of the guys on this roster are not the guys either. It's possible on a two-win football team for there to be multiple things wrong with the team. It's just that Culley has done some things independent of winning or losing that show that this is a guy that should not be a head football coach. The part and this is what I told Clint and Show yesterday, was that there's a part of me as a former player that gets insulted because it feels like, okay, you guys hired this guy knowing you're going to subject him to us, the players, and just assume that we were going to be cool with this. Like, this is like, how stupid do you think we are that did you expect that there wasn't going to be blowups like Justin Reed versus David Culley at some point or any of this stuff? Like, is you're trying to instill some kind of culture? Well, you have a guy who really is incapable of commanding respect as a head football coach. It's just flat out not going to work.
Yeah.
So that's where we are. The one thing about all this, because I don't want this to get lost in it, I've been impressed with Lovie Smith.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's various players and coaches that have impressed me. Lovie Smith has done some things that have at least improved this defense over last year.
Yep, absolutely. That was a really, really good hire. The College Football Playoff Committee, they've got a big weekend coming up. We've got conference title games coming up, including the Cougs trying to upset Cincinnati. The committee's going to evaluate all of it on Saturday night, and when they do that and they spit out the four teams that are going to be in the playoffs this season, they may have to assess a factor that they've never seen in the history of the college football playoff. We'll tell you what it is next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so the latest college football playoff rankings are out. There's six teams, I think six teams that still have a shot at the four-team playoff. Georgia is number one. I think Georgia can lose to Alabama this weekend in the SEC title game, and they'll still be in. So I think Georgia has virtually clinched a spot. Michigan is number two. They've got Iowa this weekend in the Big Ten title game. They're heavily favored in that game. Three is Alabama, which is interesting, which we'll get to in a second. Three is Alabama. They play Georgia. Four is Cincinnati. This is the highest a group of five school has ever been ranked this late in the season. They play the University of Houston, host the University of Houston in the AAC title game on Saturday at three. So those are the four teams right now. Five and six are Oklahoma State, who plays Baylor in the Big 12 title game. And then number six, Notre Dame, who is independent and sitting at home watching all the action here. Notre Dame still has a shot to get in if some things break the right way on Saturday in front of them. But Seth, for the first time, the committee is going to have to assess, do we put a team in, or do we downgrade a team? Because they may be forced to put Notre Dame in if enough stuff happens in front of them. You know, they may just move up through attrition. But the committee is going to have to sit and have conversations, whether they want to admit it openly or not, and say, do we downgrade a team who is basically the headless horseman right now? They have no head coach.
That's right, and because recency matters, and that's they factor that into it. I think the committee members have, I guess it varies from member to member how much they factor in a big injury at quarterback, right, or what have you. In previous years, you know, when a quarterback's injured and out for a few games and the team doesn't look as good, but you know the quarterback is coming back or the stud running back is coming back, they'll factor that into it. But when the coach is gone and he ain't coming back, what does that say about it? Or if, okay, what have they done? Okay, this is the deal, Sean. What have they done? Have they ever had to make the final rankings after a key player has said that he's going to sit out the playoffs or the bowl games?
I don't know that I don't know that we've ever had a player who's...
There's never been a notable person sit out of the playoffs.
Not the
They've
playoffs.
Sat out of bowl games, but they don't sit out of there. So you're right. This is pretty damn unique. I guess for maximum chaos, what you'd have to ask is what happens if Cincinnati's ranked fourth, Notre Dame is ranked fifth, and all of a sudden Luke Fickell leaves for Notre Dame. So Luke Fickell because if you're, are you going to downgrade Cincinnati for not having the coach? And yet it's not like Luke Fickell is going to be able to come in and all of a sudden take over and do everything the exact same at Notre Dame. But at least they have a head coach.
Well, my guess is if Luke Fickell got hired, I doubt he's coaching Notre Dame in the playoff. Like, it's probably more hired for next season.
Right. No, but it's a downgrade for Cincinnati at that point.
No, I'm getting to that. You made it sound like Fickell was going to come in and coach Notre Dame, and I don't think that's going to happen. But you're right.
No. But I'm saying, yeah.
just real quick.
You're still going to, you're downgrading, you're going to be downgrading a team because they don't have a head coach.
I get it. Here's the thing with those two teams, Seth. They played each other this year. Cincinnati beat Notre Dame in South Bend earlier this year. I think Brian Kelly.
Back when they both had coaches.
I get it. I think Brian Kelly bailing actually give, even if Fickell were to leave Cincinnati, I think Brian Kelly bailing from Notre Dame kind of bails out the committee. I think the committee would rather have Notre Dame in the playoff than Cincinnati, even if both coaches were still there, just because Notre Dame is bigger box office than Cincinnati.
Yeah.
It's probably a better conversation about Cincinnati and Oklahoma State, you know, because what happens there? Like, Cincinnati loses Luke Fickell to Notre Dame, which I don't think happens. But then Oklahoma State wins the Big 12 title game. Does that give the committee an out to then jump Oklahoma State? I don't think the committee wants Cincinnati in there. I think they've been forced to put Cincinnati at four. I think Alabama not falling below Cincinnati after they needed a miracle to beat Auburn is indicative of how the committee feels about Cincinnati right now. That Alabama stayed at three.
If I would say I don't think that you should let the absence of the coach affect the ranking, because it is ultimately, it's what you did in the regular season that's supposed to get you into the playoffs. And I mean, is that an absolute? Like, if all of a sudden, you know, your nine of your starting players tore their ACLs as they in the fourth quarter of a conference championship game, but they're the fourth best team or the third best team in the country, should you still put them there? That's what I do. I feel like you play the regular season and your championship games to get into that top four, and then whatever happens after that happens. So I would say rank them based on their body of work.
Yeah,
with or without the head coach.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you. Here's the thing: that if the committee, I don't know if the committee's going to admit whether or not they factor Brian Kelly not being there in their assessment of Notre Dame. I think it may come out eventually if they did downgrade Notre Dame because Brian Kelly wasn't there. If they were to downgrade Notre Dame because Brian Kelly's not there, it takes what he did on Monday, and it takes it to a whole nother level in terms of stabbing the players in the back. As of right now, it's just your garden variety stabbing in the back of breaking promises and leaving a team right before the bowl game. We've seen that happen a bunch of times before. We've never seen a coach bail on a program during the college football playoff era while his team is still mathematically very much in it to get a playoff spot. And those players go to schools like Notre Dame and Alabama and Georgia for, among many things, an opportunity to play in the college football playoff. If you're the head coach and you leave and that directly factored into the evaluation of your team and getting into a subjectively assembled playoff, that's the knife right in the back of these guys. Like, you took one of the reasons they came to school there, and you've already plundered several of them just by leaving. But if you then made the team less attractive to the playoff committee by leaving, that's a whole other level of stabbing these guys in the back.
Is there how else did Brian Kelly handle this in a slimy way? People love hearing about whether a guy addressed the team or how he broke the news to the team. How did Brian, and a ranking of 1 to 10 with 1 being the classiest way to do something classless and 10 being Tom Herman leaving the booster's vehicle at the airport.
Yeah.
Number 1 is the classiest of a non-class situation. 10 is the worst. Where is Brian Kelly?
Okay, I'll lay it all out and then we'll come up with a number. Here's what he did. All right? And I'll let the people assess for themselves. Reportedly, Kelly didn't tell anybody until after the news broke on Monday. So he didn't tell his boss, he didn't tell anybody at the school. He didn't tell any of the players. Literally all of those people, the players, the coaches who were on the road recruiting, the athletic director, they all found out via Twitter that he was leaving to take the LSU job. They had no clue this was coming. He went on they have an app, I guess. It's where, you know, like WhatsApp, or I think this is like team message app or something like that.
But you can group text everybody.
Everybody on the team, right? You can group text 100 people at the same time. Apparently, he sent a text after the news broke saying, "Whoops, sorry."
Why don't you just go ahead and go for the oopsie there, Brian K., old BK.
Oops. Yeah. Whoops, sorry.
Oopsie. Did I do that?
That's a Southern Belle as it gets, right? He's Southern Belle, the accepting of the LSU job. That's, you know what? Good job by him. He's heading south, and he's already figured out how to Southern Belle things like this. So he called a meeting at 7 a.m. for the players, met with them for 11 minutes, and then peace out. See you later.
11 minutes is pretty substantial. What did Lincoln Riley do? Lincoln Riley, did he have a brief meeting?
He did, yeah. He did. No, I think he
did have a brief meeting?
I think he did. I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
Hey, did you
11 minutes, you can get a lot said in 11 minutes.
Did you get my text yesterday about our friend Wallace Marsh?
Your Oklahoma booster.
My Oklahoma, well, the best man in my wedding, and he's a big OU guy. He put a cash offer in on Lincoln Riley's house.
Did he really?
Yes. Up in Norman.
Is that a joke? I thought you were joking.
No.
He actually did. Huh?
He actually did. Wow. Yeah, yeah. No, he actually did. You thought I was kidding around when I told you that. No, he actually did.
I thought USC was going to buy that from him. $500,000 over.
Yeah,
I asked him
the same thing. They're compensating Lincoln Riley for the house, but they're not actually exchanging. They're not getting the deed on the home, that kind of thing.
Everybody else from California is buying up real estate in this region. Might as well.
Yeah.
Except then you have to explain to them, no, Oklahoma and Texas are actually two separate states, you coastal snobs. This is the way it works out here.
To be clear, the entire reason he's doing it is to flip the house. Like, he has no intention of moving in. He should move in. I just love the fact that the deal should be... His coach is leaving. So you're like, you know what? If he's going to leave, I'm going to buy his damn house. How do you like them apples? I like it. I respect it.
If I were him, though, I'd be careful. That thing might get vandalized. It might be because, you know, people lash out irrationally. Didn't Kevin Durant's condo in Oklahoma City get trashed?
No idea.
After he ditched his buddy Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, no idea. Not sure.
I bet Russell Westbrook. What are the chances that Russell Westbrook is the guy who actually vandalized Kevin Durant's condo?
As you would say, a non-zero chance of that.
Yeah, I could see he probably went out and did donuts in the street out in front.
I could see Russ doing that.
Threw a bottle of beer into the driveway past the gate.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hey, the scariest thing about this spring's draft in the NFL has a drastic effect on the Texans and their strategy with Deshaun Watson. We'll tell you what it is next.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. John McClain will jump in with us at the top of the hour. He's brought to you by hornsolutions.net. So I'm looking yesterday, Seth, at a mock draft. We have license to be interested in those again because the Texans have at least their own first-round pick, and who knows, maybe more first-round picks than that once they're done wheeling and dealing. Dame Brugler of The Athletic, who does a really good job with his draft coverage. He's definitely one that's worth reading and worth looking at. Except that he said something in here the very, very beginning of his mock draft, before he even laid out one single pick. He said this about the 2022 NFL draft, and this should scare you a little bit if you're a Houston Texan fan, especially if the Texans wind up making a Deshaun Watson trade and wind up with multiple first-round picks. And this is classic Texans luck right here. But this is just one person's evaluation, but here's what he says. There are plenty of first-round caliber players, and the depth at certain positions will stretch well into day three on draft weekend. However, something that has been echoed by evaluators around the NFL is the lack of elite-level talent at the top of this spring's draft. Most drafts don't have 10 prospects considered no-brainers for the top 10 picks, but this year's class doesn't have more than one or two, according to feedback from NFL scouts. So once you get past what most people consider are the top one or two prospects in this draft, it's an even according to the evaluators, it's an even bigger free-for-all than it is in most seasons here. Don't like hearing that as a Texans fan.
Yeah, I don't think, and he cites it himself in what he writes there, is that that's the general feeling about it. It's not just Dane Brugler's opinion. Yeah. That seems to be the consensus. I guess the other big hallmark of this draft is that there are no quarterbacks or wide receivers to get genuinely excited about.
Right.
Which, okay, wide receivers, I could deal with that. It's the quarterback side of things where we fall into this classic mix of when the Texans have a top five pick in a year where there seem to be no genuinely awesome quarterback prospects. All right, whatever. Yeah, look, you can get a Deshaun Watson at number 11 or a Patrick Mahomes outside the top three. These things all come and go. We know how that goes. It's the other positions where I'm actually, Sean, in a year where the Texans might end up with multiple first-round picks this year, I feel okay about it because a lot of the good players are in positions where if you hit on them, they're going to be there for a decade.
Yeah.
There's several stud offensive linemen. There's, you know, you've got a safety, you've got a center, you've got guys that could last a decade or more on your team if it works out. And it seems to be like a lot of guys that maybe have high floors. Their ceilings might not be really high, but they have high floors too, where you just feel like, all right, this guy's going to work out in the NFL. It's hard for me to look at Evan Neal, the offensive tackle from Alabama, and not think that this guy is going to be, at the very least, a viable offensive tackle for 15 years in the NFL.
Yeah, especially once Doug Marrone got his meat hooks into him at Alabama. He's been through the Doug Marrone car wash at Alabama, baby.
The thing that makes me nervous about Evan Neal, actually terrifies me when I think about him coming to the Texans, is when you see that, oh yeah, he's played three different positions in his three seasons in Tuscaloosa.
No, they moved
him all over the place. Right guard, left tackle.
Yeah, no.
That's just what the Texans need, baby. The versatility.
Oh.
Give me this. This guy's a V champion. Yeah.
Well, to your point, and this is just one person's mock draft, it's Dane Brugler of The Athletic. For what it's worth, he's got Aiden Hutchinson of Michigan going first overall. He does cite the fact that it's Detroit making the pick, and there might be a little bit of a geographic play going on. Texan fans, get ready to have a high draft pick where you take another edge rusher, Kayvon Thibodeau of Oregon, which I think I like Thibodeau, and he plays this weekend, Friday night. If you want to get a look at him, he's playing in the Pac-12 title game against Utah. But he would go number two. Here's what he says. Here's what Brugler says about Kayvon Thibodeau, Seth. Although he isn't in the same prospect tier as Myles Garrett, Chase Young, or the Bosa brothers, Thibodeau is a disruptive pass rusher due to his upfield burst and quick feet. He's a strong run defender and should continue to improve as a pass rusher as his rush moves evolve. Thibodeau reminds me of a stronger, longer version of Harold Landry, who's a double-digit sack guy for the Titans right now. Texans will also be on the be in the quarterback market this offseason, but hard to see them drafting one this early, which I agree with that last part. Here's the scary thing. Somewhat scary for me is that it sounds like he's describing Jadeveon Clowney when he describes Thibodeau here. You tell me if it sounds like he's describing Clowney.
Yeah.
Thibodeau is Clowney coming out of college.
Yeah.
Thibodeau is a disruptive pass rusher due to his upfield burst and quick feet. He's a strong run defender and should continue to improve as a pass rusher as his rush moves evolve. I feel like that's what we were seeing from Clowney early in his career. We're like, boy, when he refines himself as a pass rusher, he's not only going to be winning pass rush rates on passing downs, he's actually going to be able to get to the quarterback and bring him down. And it's still not happened for Clowney. Like, to this day, he's still not that guy. 8 years in.
I think that, I guess with Clowney, the big question was always, all right, he's got this odd blend of extreme athleticism, but also extreme stiffness. He just wasn't very bendy. You know, he couldn't play low or make, he can't change direction at the last moment to actually get quarterbacks on the turf. I don't worry about that with Kayvon Thibodeau as much. But there is that, there's always the, I guess I would maybe put it more along the lines of a Mario Williams, who was a much more natural and fluid athlete than Jadeveon Clowney was, but who also didn't produce as a great pass rusher in college. But you look at him, and he checks off so many boxes that it's impossible for some people just not to salivate at the potential of what might be. It's like the opposite of a Terrell Suggs. Terrell Suggs was everything you wanted as a college pass rusher. Mm-hmm. And he just got the job done. But he had kind of a sloppy body. He ran like a 4.7 40. There wasn't anything overly impressive about him as a workout warrior or anything. But teams missed on him for, you know, partly those reasons I just cited, maybe some other stuff too. But it was that sometimes people project pass rushers based on physical skills a little bit more than they should. That's what would make me nervous. Like, okay, and it's not like Mario Williams wasn't a really good player for the Texans. I would say that most people felt like he wasn't as good as a number one overall pick, what you hope to get out of him. But that's the Aiden Hutchinson aspect, is that, all right, this guy, like Terrell Suggs, is a dog in college in a good way. He gets after it. He rushes the passer. He just flat out produces. You feel a lot better about that guy transferring his skills to the NFL.
You pointed this out before the show. Sarah Barshop of ESPN.com covers the Texans. She had this. The Texans are currently projected to have an average draft position of 2.6. So second or third pick in the draft is where they're projecting right now. A 97.3% chance of having a top five pick. So if any of you are worried about rooting for the Texans and like, oh, we should be rooting for them to get the highest draft pick possible, I would say go ahead, especially this weekend, because it's the Colts. We hate the Colts. And the Colts are on the fringe of the playoff hunt right now. It'd be nice to spoil some things for the Colts. Go ahead and root for them. It sounds to me, Seth, like the Texans are going to be able to take care of their own business in terms of finishing high in the draft without fans having to root for it to happen.
and especially in a year where, like I said, there's several offensive tackles. If you're worried that somehow the Lions, the Jaguars, the Jets, that those teams are going to actually get the one guy that ends up being the best of these top five instead of you, then so be it. All right, then you're doomed to hell for the rest of your life anyway if that happens. I think there are enough guys at enough different positions, and again, there are enough good offensive linemen. I'm going to really hope that the Texans end up liking and taking an offensive tackle at the top of the draft, because what are you hoping to do over the next couple of years? You're hoping to find a good stud young quarterback as well, and you just got to go ahead and start building for that guy. Like, whenever that quarterback arrives, whoever he is, maybe it's Davis Mills, who the hell knows, you want to be sure he's got some kind of an environment where he's not going to get David Carr to death the first couple of years and get sacked 75 times a season. The other part of this that gets really interesting is that in New England, they've long had a philosophy of not wanting to pay for pass rushers, because the philosophy is that they're overvalued. That, yeah, they're really, really important, but that the market is just too high. Bill Belichick doesn't want to be caught holding the bag on a super high-priced pass rusher that gets injured and doesn't end up, you know, contributing as much as you're paying him. He loves paying money for cornerbacks and defensive backs and all that. Well, now with Lovie Smith as a defensive coordinator, he runs a style, a scheme, where theoretically usually teams want to pay for pass rushers when they're running a zone-based scheme. It's all about getting that pressure up front. And then you can play guys who are cover two corners or zone corners on the back end, guys that shouldn't cost as much money. So it's a whole different mindset. It's like the opposite end of the spectrum from what Caserio has traditionally done in New England. Does he start spending more money in terms of draft picks and actual dollars spent on a pass rush? And is he even actually thinking about keeping Lovie Smith around long term, I suppose? That's the big question. And I think that ends up being the difference between taking either a Kayvon Thibodeau or an Evan Neal.
Is it a coincidence, Seth? Is it a coincidence? And I know Belichick is the final say-so of everything in New England, but it's worth pointing out. Because I think you point out very accurately what the strategy in New England's been. Look, they traded Chandler Jones. You know, they have not wanted to pay pass rushers until they paid Matt Judon this offseason. They paid Matt Judon a lot of money, and Judon's played well for the Patriots. Is it a coincidence that Nick Caserio leaves the front office of the Patriots, and now all of a sudden Bill Belichick actually spent top-notch free agent money on a pure pass rusher in Judon?
I don't think so. I guess it is more of a coincidence. I don't think that Caserio was the one that was holding Belichick back in that regard. I think Belichick did a lot of things that were kind of – it wasn't even just about paying a pass rusher. I mean, he paid for a lot of free agents. They just went ahead and splurged this year. And I think it was more of a recognition that, yeah, forever we had Tom Brady that allowed us to do a lot of things maybe against the grain that other team, and we didn't have to spend where perhaps other teams did, where this year we realized, okay, we're going to have this rookie quarterback. As much as a bargain as Tom Brady was for all those years, he was still making $20 million more a year than a rookie on his rookie contract.
Yeah.
So I think he just went for it this year. Plus, Judon didn't get paid. He got $30 million guaranteed at signing. It wasn't like they paid top of the market.
Yeah, no, it wasn't Khalil Judon. Mack. No, I get it. But spending more than the Patriots are accustomed to spending, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was – but it wasn't paying the thing that Belichick worries about is paying those guys, those top-tier pass rushers.
It
doesn't he doesn't want to pay a guy $100 million guaranteed as a pass rusher. So Judon is probably as far as he was willing to stretch on that.
Yeah, that's I'm glad you brought up those numbers, because that does – you're right. That does put it into some perspective at least.
It was – yeah. It was 4 years, $54 million. It's really respectable money, but not top of the line pass rusher.
Sure, yeah, not the pass rush equivalent of giving Stephon Gilmore the contract they gave him a few years ago. You're absolutely right. But you're right, and we'll get to headlines here in just a second. To your point, Seth, about the positions that are lining up early in this draft, the first quarterback Brugler has going is 10th overall, the Pickett kid, Kenny Pickett from Pitt, who, again, he plays this weekend in the ACC title game if you want to take a look at him, Texan fans. But, yeah, if you're just somebody who's responsible for the marketing of the draft and the TV ratings on the draft, this draft is going to be a lot less sexy than recent drafts near the top. If we remember last year, it was all about the quarterbacks near the top. The first three players taken were quarterbacks. Brugler has Aiden Hutchinson going one, Kayvon Thibodeau going two, Evan Neal, tackle from Alabama, three, Derek Stingley, cornerback from LSU, four. He's got another offensive tackle from NC State, Ikem Ekwonu going five, linebacker going six. He has a center going seventh from Iowa, Kyle Hamilton of Notre Dame going eighth, an edge rusher from Purdue going ninth. So he's got a bunch of edge rushers, O linemen, and a safety until you get to a position that the average fan goes like, ah, finally somebody that has the ball in their hands, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and Kenny Pickett to Carolina is an interesting one, because he had originally committed to play at Temple for Matt Rhule, and ended up dropping out because the big dogs like Pittsburgh came. So he left for Pitt. He left that boy. What a slap in the face, Temple. You know, it's one thing if you get ditched for one of the blue blood programs or something, but you got ditched for Pitt.
Well,
come on.
If Pickett had gone to Temple, he would have been ditched by Matt Rhule going to Baylor. So
he
did the right thing. He did the right thing. All right. We have John McClain jumping in with us at the top of the hour. Let's do a few headlines here for you.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
All right, we'll talk more about this with John in about 10 minutes here. But Seth, I guess the big question for the Texans is, they're back at practice today, getting ready for the Indianapolis Colts coming here this weekend, is do we expect Justin Reed just to be back practicing like he was in the week leading up to the Jets game. We've not really gotten we've not gotten anything from Culley or the Texans, or I haven't seen any reports about any sort of further discipline or that that Justin Reed's not going to be there today. What do we expect to see, do you think?
I think that he's going to be out there at practice. I think the biggest thing about this, I'd be kind of offended if I were either Dez King or Zach Cunningham or the dearly departed Charles Omenihu, because when those guys were benched for a game or disciplined for a game or what have you, it wasn't nearly as big a deal as when Justin Reed was benched for a game. And I think that part of it was, okay, you know, you look at Justin Reed as one of your bright young players that's got a lot of potential, and he's a free agent. You're hoping to maybe retain him. But I think part of it is also just simply that people think of Justin Reed as such a pleasant young gentleman. Whereas with the other guys, I think people are like, oh, yeah, all right, I could totally see that guy acting up.
Well, I would say this, too. None of them went to Mark Berman 5 minutes before kickoff to give their side of the story.
That's true. And you know what? The guy of those four guys that I talked about, the guy that we talked about the most before Reed would have been Omenihu. And what did Omenihu do? Cryptic tweet.
Yeah.
Nothing more than a cryptic tweet. So I give Reed credit for actually putting his name and thoughts to something and giving it to Berman as opposed to just cryptically tweeting some stuff. I guess the player weighing in on it does matter a lot.
You know, it matters, but I think your point is a valid one about us thinking he's such a great dude. I mean, I know you're semi-joking there, but I do think the shock of it being Justin Reed getting disciplined, like, you know, Omenihu has been kind of moody before. We knew that Zach Cunningham, before he was benched for the first quarter of that Cleveland game, he had issues in the preseason, not playing against Tampa Bay, and that Desmond King was a surprise. That was definitely a surprise, but he didn't speak out like Reed did. We know Reed better than all these guys, too. He goes all the way back to 2018. I know Cunningham goes back further than that, but I think your point about Justin Reed, we all think he's a great guy, I think that is kind of part of it. It was very surprising that he would be a guy getting disciplined, no doubt.
It was, and it's the canary in the coal mine, I guess, where if Justin Reed is having an issue with somebody, like, wait a second, how... I think with the other players, it's easier to just think of a normal football situation where, okay, whatever, he had to be disciplined, he got benched. Where Justin Reed, you just don't expect that because he's held up as the exemplary football citizen in so many ways. And to the team puts him out there as the exemplary guy and the guy that, I guess would be most Texans worthy. That was the biggest surprise. But I do expect this to now take a normal course and blow over. And we'll never hear about it again.
Yep. All right. So there you go. So
we'll hear about it, but not from those guys.
Right. No. So we'll know more today when the Texans are back at practice. David Culley meeting with the media later this morning, for what it's worth. All right. Baseball we go to, and the clock is now ticking. The countdown clock is on, and it'll be tonight, midnight Eastern time, I believe, 11:59 Eastern time, is when the collective bargaining agreement expires between the Major League Baseball players and ownership. And then we head into lockoutville after that. Presumably, it's believed that the owners are going to lock the players out until they get a new CBA agreed to. So the question here locally, because if there's a lockout, you know, look, until it starts affecting spring training and games, as a baseball fan, you're not going to really notice. Like the average baseball fan, the hardcore baseball fan will be following it very, very closely.
Well, just because we've had that question a couple times this morning, Sean, and the people have asked, like, well, what is a lockout? And I said, well, it's a lockout, duh. And then I realized I didn't have a great explanation for it. In the event of a lockout, all off-season movement involving union members would cease. No free agent signings, no trades, no major league portion of the Rule 5 draft. Basically, everything will stop at the lockout. So that's the biggest thing you'll notice, is that all of these deals, this flurry of deals, it's over until the lockout comes back. If it extends on into training camp, then that's where there's a work stoppage then. The guys aren't showing up for pitchers and catchers, all of that.
Yep. So that's the deal. So there could be a lockout. Now, to bring that back locally here, what does that mean? Well, the big story here that we're waiting on is, where does Carlos Correa land? And unless he signs somewhere today, then it'll be after the lockout that he signs somewhere. Now, my guess is that there will still be kind of back-channel talks going on with teams and things like that. You can still probably conduct some underneath-the-table sort of business, but he won't officially sign anywhere. In my opinion, Seth, we are down to really two teams that are classic 10-year contract kind of teams that are still in the market for a shortstop, potentially, and that would be the Dodgers and the Yankees. Those also happen to be the teams with the fan bases that probably have the most acrimonious hatred for Carlos Correa, would be the Yankees and the Dodgers, yeah.
They would be. They'd have to call a lockout on fan hatred for a little while. I think if when you're talking about under the table activity, I couldn't help thinking about like if in those pictures of Correa and AJ Hinch at Tiny Boxwoods from last week, if at some point during the conversation you saw Hinch kind of moving his foot over towards Carlos and just nudging him to get his attention.
Oh my god!
I don't know. James Click and Carlos Correa are out to eat in New York somewhere, just for a pleasant non-baseball conversation.
Right.
But
right.
Click just maybe touching his toe there. That's the signal.
Right at the cuff. Right at the cuff of Carlos's pant leg, right there at the bottom. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I do think if Carlos signs with the Dodgers, he's going to have to go on an all-out charm campaign, I think, and like do the morning show circuit in L.A., you know, whatever their equivalent of Good Day Houston is out there, do all of that type of stuff, and really just charm the pants out of Dodgers fans.
Which fan base do you sense hates Carlos Correa more? It sounds like the answer for you is the Dodgers, but when his name gets tied, and maybe it's because his name gets tied to the Yankees much more than it does the Dodgers. We may hear him with the Dodgers more now, though, with Seager signing in Texas and not going back to L.A. But it feels like every time, Seth, that Carlos Correa is brought up with the Yankees, the very first bullet point that's brought up is how much Yankee fans hate the Astros and hate Carlos Correa.
Yeah, but they also have a long and storied history of taking in rivals that they might despise.
Oh, that's true.
Going back to Babe Ruth, Johnny Damon. All these guys that they just flat out, I think they're used to the deal by now.
Yeah.
And ultimately what Yankees fans do is they use it as a way to feed their own ego. It's that, yeah, look, out there, you guys are all out in the territories. We're the evil empire. Eventually, you bend the knee and you come play for us.
Yeah.
So they kind of absorb those guys into the fold, and that's the way they view themselves. As far as hatred goes, this is where you have to make the distinction. In New York, they're much more likely to hit you over the head with a beer bottle for any reason whatsoever. You know, just walking down the street, bash. Look at Rick Moranis got assaulted in New York. Yeah, Rick Moranis assaulted in New York. In L.A., it's much more. Did you see the video? Some guy just punched him. And this guy was definitely a Yankees
fan. It's funny.
Your tone is funny
to me. You cite Rick Moranis as this beacon of likability for some reason.
He is. Look at him. I know how he could be more harmless than an aged Rick Moranis. He was harmless when he was 34. Imagine what he's like now at 65 or 70.
Yeah.
Some Yankees fan just bashes him right in the face, sends him to the hospital. I assume it was a Yankees fan.
Yeah, no.
I don't know for sure. So in L.A., it's much more likely to be a targeted offense. Mm-hmm. So it's either going to be baseball-related, drug-related, dance class-related. It's one of those things in L.A. So it's a much more targeted hatred. And they target their hatred towards Carlos Correa. It's much more focused than it is, where it's just a generalized, we'll bash you over the head, whether you're a random person or Rick Moranis or Carlos Correa.
That's true. Hey, I don't know if you saw this.
Did that answer your question?
That probably in there somewhere was the answer to my question.
If you indeed even asked the question.
I think I did. I don't know. I don't remember. I'm still focused on why Rick Moranis came up in the answer. That's all.
Because when I'm thinking about violence in New York City, that's one of the most notable recent examples. Poor Rick Moranis just walking down the street, some Tony, you know, probably Upper East Side place.
Unbelievable.
Bam! Right in the kisser. Right in his beautiful, beautiful kisser.
Unbelievable. Did you see this? Someone by the name of Josh Cameron tweeted, the real game-changing move, they tweeted this yesterday, the real game-changing move the Astros need this offseason, and I agree with this, actually, is to get 2018-2019 Alex Bregman over 2020-2021 Alex Bregman. That would change everything. Reply to Josh Cameron.
From Bregman?
From Alex Bregman. He'll be back. He'll be back.
I like this, referring to himself in the third person.
Now, here's the thing. Here's the thing, Seth. Here is the thing with this tweet from Alex Bregman. Josh Cameron, I'm not going to bash him at all. I'm just going to point something out, and I'll let people digest it however they want. I don't know who Josh Cameron is. He follows me, so I apologize, Josh, if I should know you. But his bio says, Bregman told me he'll be back. That's his bio right now.
Please change that.
Yeah. So that's pretty funny. Bregman, Josh Cameron's tweet does not have @A_Breg_1. It just has Alex Bregman's name in it, which tells me that either Bregman's people told him, hey, this dude tweeted about you, or more likely, Alex Bregman has a column on his tweet deck that searches on his name, Alex Bregman.
I thought we've been over this multiple times, Sean. There's no way you can figure it out. Because these guys, the problem that athletes have these days is that all these would-be admirers of theirs think that they're doing their favorite athletes a favor by sending them any of the venom that they see. So some Astros fan sees this tweet by Josh Cameron, and he DMs it to Alex Bregman. Look at what this guy's saying! And then Bregman sees it, and he responds. Maybe he was searching his own name, whatever it might be. I don't judge athletes over this stuff.
Do you think what Josh Cameron said here is criticism of Bregman, or it's just acknowledging the facts that Bregman was a fraction of what he was in 2018 and 2019 the last couple of years? I mean, that's due to being banged up. It's injuries and things like that.
Yeah, that's just a statement of fact. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's his opinion.
Yeah.
But it's based very much on the facts, and I think ones that obviously Bregman doesn't disagree with that.
Right.
Like Bregman in saying he'll be back acknowledges that 2018, 2019 Alex Bregman was better than the Bregman of the last 2 years.
Yeah.
This is a cooperative effort between these two, Josh Cameron and Alex Bregman.
I think Bregman searches his name. That's my opinion. That's just my opinion. I think he searches his name.
Is it a big deal if he does that?
No, I'm just saying. He can do whatever he wants.
I don't know, but I always see that as a criticism where people will be like, oh, "Look, I don't search my name, or I try not to when I don't need to." Sometimes I have to search my name to figure out whether I'm going to block somebody or not. Or like somebody will say something to me, and I'm like, "All right, is this guy just being a jerk in the moment, or is he always a jerk?" So I'll search. I'm like, "Oh, okay, there's a history here. I'm blocking you." But for the most part, I don't do it because it's bad for my mental health.
Yes.
For people who kind of get some juice off of that or enjoy mixing it up, I don't see the issue with it.
Okay.
I think some guys take it too far, but I'm okay with guys having a healthy amount of ego. They just want to see what folks are saying about them out there.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you.
Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.